A spy was found at the western gates. Father is gone right now, off meeting with some general or other at one of the outposts on the southern end of the Fire Nation. And with Azula out for a few days with her friends, it's only natural that Zuko would be the next highest authority. That he is the only person the guards can turn to for orders at the moment. Still, he feels small. He feels stupid. As he hurries down the hall, he finds himself glancing sideways. The guard who first brought the news is one of the oldest in Father's service, and one of very few who occasionally makes allowances for Zuko's youth and ignorance. Not trustworthy, exactly, but at least not desperate enough for Father's approval to make an immediate report if Zuko stumbles or asks questions.
"What exactly am I supposed to do?"
Zuko asks, half hoping that his voice will be too quiet for the man to hear. He isn't so lucky. The guard looks at him like it's strange that he doesn't somehow find this both obvious and easy.
"You'll authorize the sentence. We all know the law when it comes to spies. Me and the other men just need someone to sign off on the execution."
It may not be a complicated process, but the simplicity doesn't make it easier. Zuko has never had this kind of authority before. He shouldn't even have it now. Even if there is a spy here, even if his life is in danger because of that, he doesn't think he can stomach an execution. Not at his hands. Maybe not at anyone else's either. His doubts only intensify when the doors open to a prisoner crouched on the floor and flanked on either side by guards. The spy, if she is a spy at all, is just a girl.
"Well, Your Highness, all we need is your order."
Zuko thinks he might be sick. The girl is engulfed by long, dark robes, and her face is hidden beneath a broad hat and veil, but all the many layers of fabric don't hide the fact that she is young. Smaller than him, and probably terrified. He can't do this. He won't.
"Prince Zuko?"
He swallows hard. He will not hurt this girl. And neither will anyone else if he can help it.
"We don't know why she's here,"
Zuko says a little harshly. Though he is the highest authority left in the palace today, he still has to tread lightly.
"Spies don't work alone. Don't you know that? I'm not giving any orders until we have a better idea of what's going on here. Understood?"
The guards seem briefly taken aback. They've undoubtedly heard the same tone before, but always from Azula or Father, not Zuko. But he steels himself against their shock and presses on.
"Did any of you even bother to ask her any questions?"
One of the men shrugs.
"Of course we tried. She wouldn't say anything."
He fixes Zuko with a stern look.
"The Fire Lord doesn't like us to waste our time on uncooperative prisoners."
He could have guessed as much. Thankfully, Father isn't here to give his opinion.
"Then don't waste your time. If you're so busy that you can't question a prisoner properly, then leave. I can't think of anything more important to do, so I'll do it myself."
The guards exchange glances, clearly uncertain. Even with Father and Azula gone, Zuko isn't meant to have this type of authority. He isn't meant to overrule the guards, but now that they've asked him to involve himself, it may be too late to push him out. At least that's what he hopes.
"Go on,"
he presses.
"Clearly your time is too valuable for this."
The guards exchange looks again, and it's all that Zuko can do to hold his gaze steady. He doesn't have the ruthlessness to back up his bluster the way that Father and Azula do, and the guards all know that. They have to. He just has to hope that they aren't willing to take any risks arguing with royalty. It takes longer than he likes, but one by one, the guards retreat out the door, leaving him alone with the girl still crouched in the middle of the floor. Zuko exhales and rubs his forehead. Unless he's badly mistaken, they won't have gone far, probably no farther than the corridor. But that should be all the space he needs to think, to figure out how exactly he can hope to get away with letting her live. She can't stay here. He knows that much already. If the girl is still here when Father returns, she'll be executed anyway. which means that he'll have to get her out of the palace one way or another. That should be fine. With the guards presumably watching the door, he won't be able to lead her out through the usual corridors, but he knows the tunnels and passages under the palace well enough to make up for that. The real trouble, he suspects, will be in convincing her to follow him in the first place. The girl moves her head ever so slightly, apparently looking toward the door, probably calculating her chances of escape now that there's only one person left to watch her. Not good, he knows. With her hands still bound behind her back, she can't possibly overpower him, much less the men still waiting outside. Taking a step back, he crouches, trying to catch a glimpse of her face beneath her hat. Then, when she jerks her head downward as though anticipating his curiosity, he speaks as soft and gentle as he can.
"What's your name?"
She gives a short, bitter laugh. "Just how stupid do you think I am?" Though he knows she won't see it, Zuko shrugs.
"You were careless enough to get caught. I don't know if that makes you stupid."
With a sharp exhalation, she shakes her head. "Fine. That was a long shot to begin with."
"Are you the same painted lady who helped all those people in Jianghui?"
Though she doesn't answer, she seems to stiffen ever so slightly. For him, that is confirmation enough.
"My father was furious when we got the news. Not that that's anything new. He's always furious about something."
"If that's supposed to be a threat, give it up. I'm not scared of you or of him." There is something familiar about her voice, but Zuko can't immediately place it. Hastily, he shakes his head.
"No, that's not... I'm not trying to threaten you."
He exhales, steadying himself.
"What I'm saying is, Father isn't here right now. And no matter what he says, I'm glad someone was there to make a difference. I'd like to do more myself, but there's only so much I can get away with when the guards are looking over my shoulder every minute of the day."
The girl neither speaks nor moves, but Zuko senses a shift in her all the same. It's almost like she's listening more intently now.
"The truth is, I don't really care why you're here. The law says that spies are supposed to be executed, and right now I'm the only one who can approve that. But I won't do it. I don't care if you came here specifically to kill me. No one is ever going to die because of me if I can help it."
His shoulders feel lighter now that he's said it, and in the wash of relief that follows, a burst of clarity breaks through as well. He can't kill for Father. He can't hurt people for Father. And although he's been fighting against the natural conclusion for a long time, he finally has to admit it. If he can't do what Father wants from him, then there just isn't a place for him here. One way or another, Zuko has to leave the palace. It surprises him just how comfortable that realization feels. The girl looks up, and for the briefest moment, Zuko catches a glimpse of her face. "So what are you going to do to me then?" For a few seconds, Zuko can't speak. He knows her. Her hair is covered and her face streaked with crimson paint, but he would recognize her anywhere. Katara. He swallows hard, grateful beyond words when she looks away again. If he had to meet her eyes, he doesn't think he would be able to speak at all.
"Nothing. I'm not planning to do anything to you."
He can't. The fact that it's her doesn't change that. If anything, it pushes him into action faster. Mind made up, Zuko circles behind her to begin loosening the bindings on her wrists. Though she tries to jerk away from him, Zuko doesn't stop.
"There are passages out of the palace. Secret ones. If I show you the way, no one will know you're gone for hours."
And that, hopefully, will be enough time for him to decide where he needs to go too. Unsurprisingly, she ignores his hand when he offers to help her up. There is enough hesitance in her movement that he suspects her legs have probably fallen asleep, but she stands as tall as she can, somehow an imposing presence, despite the fact that she only reaches the level of his nose. "Why should I trust you?" Though the answer comes automatically, it still surprises him.
"You shouldn't."
Then, before she can take that as an excuse to flee straight into the waiting arms of the palace guards, he adds,
"But everyone else here is willing to kill you. There's nothing worse that I could do."
Again, he extends a tentative hand in her direction.
"You don't have to trust me. I probably wouldn't if I were you. But since you're already here, it doesn't seem like you have very many choices."
For a few seconds, Katara doesn't respond. Clearly, she isn't happy with the suggestion, but after a brief pause, she sighs. "Fine. Where am I supposed to go from here?" The tunnels and passages beneath the palace seem smaller, narrower than he remembers. Zuko can't be certain whether that's because he's grown since he last explored them, or because Katara is there beside him. In any case, she stays closer by his side than he expects, probably hoping that the proximity will keep him from catching a clear glimpse of her face. "Does the royal family spend a lot of time sulking around underground?" she asks after a few minutes of near silence. Surprised, he glances her way, but all he can see in the darkness is the dim silhouette of her hat. Just as she probably hopes. She's bold. He has to give her that much. In her position, most people probably wouldn't be prying for information. But Katara isn't most people, and he can't help but respect her boldness.
"We don't make a habit of eating or sleeping down here, if that's what you mean,"
he says.
"I haven't been down here for a long time."
"Then how do you expect me to believe that you know where you're going? All these tunnels look the same, and the last thing I need is to end up stuck down here with you." The venom in her tone is unmistakable, and Zuko briefly wonders whether that would change if she knew that he recognized her. If caring enough to pull a former enemy out of harm's way might be enough to earn him a scrap of trust. Probably not, he decides. Katara doesn't trust him, doesn't have any reason to think his intentions might be good. Not after bossing Sei. No, right now, she probably thinks that his ignorance is the only thing keeping her safe. If he admits to knowing her, she will probably assume that he's leading her into peril worse than what she faced at the palace.
"I have a good memory and a decent sense of direction," he answers. "I was down here enough times as a kid to find my way out again."
So long as Father hasn't locked off the more obscure sections of the tunnels in the past 3 years, that should still be true. Even this far below ground, he can still feel the direction of the sun, and it isn't difficult to keep himself pointed toward the exit in the western forest. Sure enough, he finds his way to the long, narrow passage that stretches out beneath the entire city, and though Katara hesitates, she follows him around the corner. "Where exactly are you taking me?" she asks, her tone more uncertain than before. He can't blame her for that. While the rest of the tunnels are more or less smooth and deliberate in their construction, this section is entirely rough-hewn, looking more like a natural cave than anything else.
"Out of the city."
He doesn't know if she's familiar enough with its layout for a more detailed explanation to mean anything to her, but he studies the contours of the blackened stone around them all the same.
"We should be close to the rim of the caldera by now. The tunnel feels a lot longer than it is, but it's pretty much a straight shot from here."
By the flickering light of the flame hovering over his hand, it's difficult to judge her reaction, but it seems reasonable enough to guess that she is neither pleased nor entirely convinced by that answer. Still, she hasn't tried to flee from him yet. "Why are you doing this?" she presses after a pause. "Those guards know that I was here. When they find out that I'm missing, they'll know it was because of you." Her voice positively burns, and Zuko wonders whether it's anger or fear or something else entirely. Whether she thinks that he means her harm or not. Since there is nothing he can say to convince her otherwise, he doesn't try. Instead, he focuses on her last sentence.
"I know that. And I'm sure those three will spread the word to everyone else."
"So what happens to a member of the royal family who loses a prisoner?" This time, when he glances her way, he finds her face tilted upward, and her blue eyes pierce straight through to his core. His breath catches briefly in his throat. Can she really believe that he doesn't remember her?
"Execution, probably,"
he says, forcing his eyes forward again.
I don't think it's ever happened before, but aiding a spy is definitely considered treason.
And wherever you're taking me is somehow worth that?
I don't plan on getting myself killed, if that's what you're saying.
He has to duck ever so slightly to pass beneath a low-hanging rock.
The guards can't do anything to me on their own. Only a higher royal can punish the Crown Prince, and Father isn't supposed to be back for 3 more days.
From the corner of his eye, he watches for a reaction. Sure enough, Katara stiffens slightly, apparently recognizing the significance of that date.
They don't tell me much if they can help it,
he continues.
But it sounds like there's a solar eclipse coming, and Father wants to be there in time to face the Avatar if he shows up.
She stiffens again, but this time it isn't just a slight change in her posture. This time she stops walking entirely. She probably thinks that the Avatar's plan to take advantage of the eclipse is a secret. She's probably been hoping that a combination of surprise and the lack of firebending on that day will be enough to bring the city to its knees. He has probably just broken her hopes for a quick end to the war. If that keeps her and her friends from running blind into battle, though, he sees nothing wrong with puncturing that particular hope. It's better if she and her friends don't run headfirst into a fight they can't win. After a considerable pause, Katara composes herself enough to press on, apparently hoping that he won't notice her distress.
So, what are you planning to do then?
Then, it doesn't really matter.
He angles his shoulders just enough to hint that he's ready to keep walking as soon as she joins him.
I'm not planning to be here on the day of the eclipse.
What?
Her composure cracks again, and she jogs a few steps to catch up.
What is that supposed to mean?
He hasn't thought about it long enough to have a real plan yet, and still somehow the words come of their own accord.
I shouldn't have come back here in the first place,
he begins, trying his best not to look her way.
Being home is nothing like I hoped, and I really should have seen that coming. But I didn't, so...
He exhales, long and slow, to steady himself before he can continue, and the flame hovering over his hand swells.
I guess it's lucky that Father isn't in the city right now. Even if the guards are sending him a message about how I'm up to no good as we speak, he couldn't get back to the palace before this time tomorrow. At least that gives me a little time to pack and get out.
Katara doesn't respond immediately, and emboldened, he goes on.
I've been thinking about the Avatar recently. About how if he's planning to face my father on the day of the eclipse, he probably hasn't learned any firebending yet. And maybe if I could find a way to warn him and his friends, he might change his mind. Maybe he'll decide not to take on a fight he can't win.
And then what?
Bitterness has taken root in her voice again, and her footsteps grow more forceful.
The only alternative he would have is learning firebending. Who's going to teach him that? You?
I could, if he and his friends would let me.
He chances a glimpse in her direction.
I've made my share of mistakes, but maybe I could try to make things right that way.
Katara scoffs quietly, and for a second, he almost believes that she's put the pieces together. That she knows he recognizes her and is trying his best to make amends in the only way he can. But then she squares her shoulders and keeps her eyes fixed straight ahead.
I'd think of a backup plan if I were you. Most people with sense aren't going to want anything to do with a Fire Nation prince.
I know that. But I'm sure most of my own people will want me dead by this time tomorrow, so I might have to take my chances anyway.
It's difficult to tell whether some part of her believes him or if she's simply done talking, but in either case, Katara goes quiet. And although the tunnel stretches on longer than he remembers, though the tension in the air grows almost unbearable at times, Zuko has no choice but to do the same. He's said his piece for now. If she doesn't believe him, no amount of words is likely to change her mind. When at last they reach the door to the outside world, he allows the flame to blink out and throws all his weight, all his strength into opening the latch, then sliding the immensely heavy door aside. Though the sun has dipped below the horizon, the light that spills into the tunnel feels almost blinding. It takes a few seconds of blinking before his eyes adjust, and he finds Katara still beside him, blinking against the brightness. When her eyes seem to adjust, Katara shoots a wary look his way before venturing out into the balmy evening air. Zuko, meanwhile, doesn't dare to go much farther.
"What are you playing at?"
she demands, whirling back to face him once she's well out of his reach.
"I know who you are! Don't pretend that you've secretly been on the right side all along!"
She still doesn't think he knows her. That much is clear. Zuko sighs.
"I haven't been on your side before. Not deliberately. But now, people change their minds sometimes."
A scoff.
"Well then, good luck convincing the Avatar and his friends that you're not faking this change of heart. If you've changed your mind once, you can do it again."
As she begins to turn away, to make her retreat into the forest, an odd sense of calm and certainty comes over him. Even in the face of her anger and mistrust, his decision solidifies. He's leaving the palace soon. Before the end of the night, if he moves quickly enough. And when he does, beside her is precisely where he wants to be.
"Katara."
She freezes in her tracks. There are a million things he could say, a million that he wants to. But every question, every apology dies on his lips when she turns back far enough for him to see the blank space at the hollow of her throat.
"I don't know if you were wearing your necklace when you got captured this time," he says. "I need to go back long enough to pack up some supplies, so if you've lost it, I can try to bring it back to you."
Her hand flies up to her neck, and even under the veil, he sees her eyes widen.
"I am leaving home,"
he adds, his voice both softer and firmer than before.
"And I do want to help. I'd like that to mean working with you and the Avatar to end all the fighting, but if you won't have me, I'll find another way."
She is quiet long enough for him to step back into the dark of the tunnel, long enough for him to take hold of the latch and start hauling the door closed again. Long enough for him to nearly miss it when she says his name.
"Zuko, don't waste your time."
He freezes, heart sinking clear down to his stomach. But Katara isn't finished.
"I left my necklace back at camp. Don't put yourself in danger looking for it."
And with that, she turns away.